Mental health struggles do not discriminate, but our societal response to them does. And men are trapped in a cycle of silence, not by choice, but by a culture that equates vulnerability with weakness. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Hard Part Podcast. It's Alex here, and I'm your guide on this journey through the crossroads of masculinity and mental health. And today we're diving into a topic that's close to my heart, the stigma around men seeking help. Before we get into the show, I want to just mention where you can find me on socials. So on TikTok, I'm over at By Alex Holmes. That's B-Y Alex Holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S. That's over on TikTok. On Instagram, it would be the Hard Part Podcast that you could find me on the most in the most accessible way. You've got my Substack, which is byalexholmes.substack.com. You can drop me an email, alex@alexholmes.co. And you can get me on YouTube, which is By Alex Holmes as the handle, but you could just search this. But all of these would be in the show notes, but I thought it'd be good just to show you that you can just reach out to me in those ways. And the second thing I wanted to mention prior to this is that this episode will have mention of suicide and suicide ideation, and I want you to protect yourself. So if you do feel like that's going to be too heavy for you, I would love for you to just protect yourself, take a step away, head over to the last part of the episode because the timestamps will be in the show notes anyway, and hopefully it won't be too heavy for you, but obviously please protect yourself. And the final thing I'll have to say is that yes, I am a coach, yes, I am a therapist, I am not your coach or your therapist, so any thing that is said on here is not to be taken as if it is specifically me working with you in a therapeutic capacity. You are to take this as a resource, but it is not a substitute to professional mental health guidance and support from your own licensed professional, whoever you decide to work with. And if you wish to work with me, please send me an email, alex@alexholmes.co, and I can have a conversation with you. And if not me, then I will happily refer you on to colleagues or other people that would probably be better suited for you, if not with me. Please take this episode with the energy in which it is intended, to inform, to educate, to be a resource, and to support you additionally to the support you're already getting. With all that being said and done, let's get into the show. So today I wanted to speak about the stigma around men's mental health and seeking help. So this stigma in men is something that's not only really common and pervasive in our society, but it's very, very damaging. And it's like a shadow that follows many of us. It's like whispering that vulnerability is a weakness, and that to seek help is to fail as a man. And in my book, I speak a lot about failure and success. And one of the big things that a lot of men struggle with is being able to communicate their feelings, their emotions. And if they have, quote unquote, too many big feelings and too many emotions, then it can be seen as a failure and as a weakness. Understanding why the stigma exists is looking at how it's woven into every fabric of how society constructs masculinity and the history of masculinity itself. And something that I had a conversation with the author of A History of Masculinity on my show, like when it was time to talk, and it was several episodes ago, and it should still be in the episode lists if you want to go back down. We're taught from a young age that being strong is to be manly, and to suppress our emotions is to be manly, and to solve our problems alone is to be manly and to be masculine, and to talk about those issues, to have communal conversations around health and around well-being and around your mental health and psychology, is feminine. So a lot of men are socialized as boys to not speak about the stuff that is going on with them, which, as you can imagine, is a gateway to so many different things. It's a gateway to abuse. It's a gateway to deep mental health and psychological problems. And it's a gateway just to neglect and abandonment, and also to entering into relationships where you cannot express the things you need to express because you can't show who you are because you don't know. And the hard truth is that a lot of those beliefs are outdated, and they can be very, very dangerous to our conditioning and our growth as men. So as we know, and as I try to get across, is that mental health struggles don't discriminate. They can affect anyone of any gender at any time. But the barriers are significantly higher for men when seeking help, just internally and socially. And because admitting you need help often feels like you're admitting defeat. And it goes against the grain of everything I've just mentioned with regards to traditional male roles and archetypes. And that is a big challenge for a lot of guys, especially as somebody who works with a lot of guys. When it comes to their mental health and their well-being, it is a huge challenge to get to a place within the therapeutic relationship that allows them to be able to speak about what has been going on, and getting to that place each session can be and can have a lot more hurdles than working with people who are a bit more fluent in their emotional language and in their emotionality. So we need to shift this perspective, because seeking help and acknowledging that you're struggling is, I would say, a profound act of bravery. When I sent that first email to my therapist and to my coach and to my mentors to say that I needed help and I needed support, it was that first step towards healing and towards becoming the leader of my own life, and to be able to step into that space to say, look, I'm taking control of this, because I can't keep going on like this. I can't keep having arguments. I can't keep having fractured and fragile relationships. I can't keep feeling this deep sense of insecurity. I can't keep feeling this anxiety, this pressure, this depression. I can't keep feeling like I am inadequate. And my job is to help you move through those feelings to get to a place where you can feel adequate, where you can feel valued, where you can reduce your anxiety and find the root of it, and the depression as well, and to be able to have these conversations with the right language so that you can get your point across clearly and effectively without you damaging the relationships that you hold dear to you, and being alienated or alienating others, and generally building more connections, building more friendships, and building more meaningful relationships as it goes. And this is where self-leadership begins, because self-leadership embodies self-awareness and emotional regulation. And we will get into those topics at another time. But for now, my biggest question has always been about, like, how do we break this stigma? And I think it starts with conversations like this one. It continues with each of us changing how we engage with our emotions, how we support the men in our lives, and how are we encouraging openness, creating safe spaces for vulnerability, and how are we modeling that behavior for ourselves and the people around us? One story that I wanted to have a talk about was one that sticks with me from two guys that were in my men's group over the pandemic. And it's a story of Carl and Drew. And Carl was an outgoing, bubbly, and enthusiastic man. And Drew was a bit more introverted, a bit more mellow, and a bit more serious about life, right? So, Carl would consider Drew his best friend, and they were, and by virtue of meeting up each week, they would go to the pub, they would play games. They wouldn't necessarily talk about anything deep or anything in particular. And they would speak about football and they would have drinks and sometimes they'll talk about women and sometimes they'll talk about politics, but they wouldn't go too deeply into what they were going through and what was happening with them. They never had a heart-to-heart about what they were going through. Beneath the surface, Drew hated his job and was struggling in his relationship. And Carl was such a big personality, he didn't think he would care about any of this. He didn't think that anybody would want to listen to his problems, right? So Drew didn't say anything to Carl because Carl seemed to have everything together. He was always like, look, this is such a great time we're having. One day, Drew went to the pub on their designated Thursday after work. And they had arranged the week before to meet there. So they hadn't really spoken that week. And when Drew went to the pub, Carl wasn't there. Carl didn't turn up. After an hour, Drew sat there and was like, he's not coming. Drew called Carl and it went straight to voicemail. He called connected friends. They hadn't heard from him. Someone heard from him as little as a couple of hours before, but they hadn't really endeavored to find out where he was, what he was doing. They just assumed that Carl, being the kind of man he was probably out doing something with other people. And so Drew went over to his house just to make sure that he was okay. Knocked on the front door and the curtains were drawn slightly. There was a small crack. And he went to his house, knocked on the door. There was nobody there, nobody answering. But Drew said he felt himself getting really angry and frustrated. And he thought that Carl had abandoned him for some more interesting friends, for a more interesting event. This was their thing and he wasn't there. It was a very me-centered experience for Drew. And he was very much like, I really want to make sure that I'm not feeling like I'm being abandoned. So that means Carl is the bad guy. And he became more and more angry. And he felt that he was being abandoned in that instance, which again is his own stuff that he's built up, and he's become attached to the meetups that they have each week. But now that that's not happened, his concern is not necessarily with Carl, it's with how he feels about himself. He turned to leave and he said, actually, let me just check through the window just to see. There was a small gap. And he looked through and he saw a figure kind of slumped on the sofa. And it didn't look like he was breathing. So he panicked and he called the police and thought, let me just call the ambulance. But I don't know how to get in here. But as long as he's called them, something could happen. He didn't look like he was breathing. So he ran to the neighbor, whom he had met before. And the neighbor said he didn't have a spare key, but he knows that through the back of Carl's house, they could get into the garden. And he tends to keep it unlocked just as a force of habit. So they managed to go through the garden, through the neighbor's house, and into the back of Carl's house. And they went through, and there was Carl, slumped in his chair, and he had a bottle of vodka in his right hand and like a bottle of pills in his lap, and it looked like the lid had been unscrewed, and it was like pills on the floor, and it was a state in the living room. But the neighbor ran over to him because Drew was frozen on the spot. He didn't know what to do. He basically stood there. He was like, oh my god, like, my friend is there. I have no idea what to do, what to check for. But the neighbor ran over, checked his pulse, and said, oh, he's still breathing and he's still alive, but it's really, really low. Like, did you call the ambulance? And Drew said, yeah, I called the ambulance before, fortunately. And Drew sat there, waiting for the ambulance to come, provided all of the checks that he needed to provide, his, you know, how he knows Carl, etc. But he was devastated. He was devastated. He'd almost lost his best friend. And his first consideration was, his best friend had left him to find other people that were more interesting than him. He later came to find, when Carl came around and they had a chat, is that Carl had deep financial issues. He was behind on payments. He wasn't doing too well at his job, and he turned to alcohol to escape. So whenever he went to the pub, he had just had a drink before to kind of bring himself up so that he was a bit more of the life of the party. He didn't want to bring things down. He didn't want to make the energy go really low for their meetups because he felt like he had to be there for Drew, because Drew was a bit more of a mellow kind of person. And he felt that at least in that one moment, he could bring Drew up. But the question always was, who is bringing Carl up? Who is helping him with his own stuff and helping him get through the things that he needs to get through as well? And so he just wanted to end it all. So he drank himself into a stupor and he had the pills there, but he passed out before he could take any of those things. And fortunately, Drew and his neighbor found him. Carl and Drew joined the men's group over the pandemic. And they had a conversation. And I mean, Carl remained in the group chat for a while. And he said that he was happy to be in a group where he could talk about his experiences. And it helped him on his way. And it helped him to get to where he needed to be, in a community of people that he felt that he could listen to. And it's helped him on his journey to finding a therapist, to dealing with his own stuff, and also being a bit more authentic in his approach to life as well, so that he's not being fake and putting on a happy face so that others can feel good around him. He is also still that big character, but he's also very clear about when things are really damaging for him, what he can do next. And thankfully, his financial situation was rectified. He was just going through a bit of a panic, found a new job, reduced some of his outgoings, and he stopped drinking. And it was just really good to actually see him move from being so caught up and codependent on, you know, on the negative coping mechanisms, and take his personal health very, very seriously so that he can kind of be a better version of himself going forward. But yeah, things like that, being able to speak about what's going on with you to your friends, to people that are closest to you, is important so that people can help you. And there's no use trying to put on a brave face if you don't have the resources or the capacity or the community to support you. So how can we break these cycles? So in order to embrace healing and embrace like fostering a healthier and more supportive environment for ourselves, we can go through several things. I mean, here are some brief strategies that could be very useful. We can create an open dialogue, starting conversations about mental health with your friends, family, and your community. Is important. It's hard. Yes, all of these points are going to be hard. They're not easy, but they are low barrier to entry, because the only barrier would be ourselves, right? So sharing personal experiences can help men demystify the mental health issues and create a safe space for others to do the same. We can change the narrative from isolation to more solidarity and understanding. So that's helpful. The second point could be educating yourself and others. Mental health first aid is always helpful. Reading books, watching documentaries, getting to know the language and the concerns that can actually happen when it comes to mental health care, especially when it comes to suicide prevention and personal help and personal development as well. And understanding that mental health issues are both, or can be, medical conditions, but also they can be impacted by a variety of things, such as your environment, the kind of food you're eating, the way that we are interacting with the people in our lives, dealing with our own stuff, our own personal stuff, and you know, we need to be able to create a more compassionate and supportive environment for one another. The same way that if somebody had physical health issues, we would kind of become a bit more accommodating to them in a sense. We can seek professional help, like myself, my colleagues, and there's strength in that. Consulting a therapist, a counselor, a mental health professional, not only aids your healing journey, but also sets a powerful example for others. And it shows that taking steps toward better mental health is an act of courage and not weakness. That was the hardest part for me, sending the email to my therapist. It took a long time after months of being on calls or consultations, trying to reach out to the local authority to help them place me. It just took a long time. And I just thought, you know what, let me actually send an email and take control of the situation so that I can kind of embark on the healing journey that I need to go on. And that is also very important. The next thing I would say is find something to advocate for. A lot of men need a purpose as well. A lot of men feel that, you know, striving forward for a purpose that does a fundamental good is always helpful. And whether that's in the workplace or within educational institutions, I think advocating for better mental health resources and policies can lead to significant changes. I'm not saying you're going to go in there and you're going to change the world, but I think that noticing things, like, you know, when if you're at work, push for mental health days or access to counseling services or mental health education and training programs. Those are real tangible steps that you could take your advocacy to the next level, especially in your environment, in your community, and around the people that need it the most. And of course, I'm going to plug this, my book, Time to Talk, How Men Think About Love, Belonging, and Connection. And also, if you want to join one of my men's groups, drop me a message on Instagram, TikTok, or email. All the information was at the top of the show, but it will also be in the show notes. So if you ever wanted to just go down that route, you could always just contact me and I could put you in the right direction. If I've got something going on, I can direct you to what I'm doing. But I know that there's so many different resources and places that people are going to right now. And I would happily push you in the right direction if that's something that you are really in desperate need of. So by adopting some of these strategies, like, a lot of men can play a crucial role in changing the perceptions around mental health. And encouraging a culture of openness and supporting the mental health and well-being of everyone in their community. And especially if we are going to stand here and be proclaimed as leaders, we need to be able to lead effectively and lead ourselves, right? You can't be leaders and be struggling. It doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't help. We need to be responsible for our own health and changes and addressing our challenges and being able to communicate effectively. And it is a long road. So we need to be able to kind of get to a place where we can say, all right, let me start. I don't know exactly where I need to begin, but I'm going to just start now and begin to inquire with what is going on with me. And that is something that I feel like a lot of men need to do more of. It won't always be at the bottom of a gym floor. Sometimes it's in a therapist's room. And as a hypnotherapist and a health coach, I've seen firsthand the transformation that can happen when men feel supported to speak openly about struggles, about the things that's going on with them, how we interact with one another when we're sharing our difficulties. And it's like, it's nothing short of miraculous, because once you get to the point where you can share what's going on with you, that path to healing is vast, because the path to healing is not a straight line. It is not linear, and it's filled with challenges, but it's also filled with growth and learning and an incredible amount of strength. So to anyone listening who feels that weight or who feels like they're battling their mind and hearts alone, I want to say this: you are not alone. Your feelings are valid. Seeking help is not just okay, it's commendable. It's brave. It's the hardest part, yes, i.e. the name of the podcast. It is the hard part. but it's also the most crucial step towards reclaiming your life and putting yourself in a position where you can be the leader of your healing and of your journey and manifest a life for yourself that is beyond your wildest dreams. So let's challenge that status quo together. Let's redefine strength, not as the absence of struggle, but as the courage to face it head on. Let's build a future where the stigma around men's mental health is just this thing of the past. We should be able to speak to our children or the next generation and say, yeah, there was time when men didn't speak about their mental health, but I'm glad to see that you can, and I'm speaking with you about what's going on. And you want to be able to pass those things on to the next generation rather than the stuff that we would rather not see come up again and again and again. Thank you for tuning in today. Remember, this journey we're on, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. Please take care of yourselves and each other. This has been The Hard Part with me, Alex Holmes. Until next time, keep pushing forward, and remember, the hard part always leads to the most rewarding parts. Peace out.